We opened the Hilchos Bishul Akam last time. We had a chance to get just a little bit of a taste, an overview in terms of Macholi Akum in general, that series of Mishnayos, the end of the second paragraph of Avodah Zarah, Yisuri Hana, Yisuri Achila. We had a chance to see that the Mishnah Lamed Hei presents several foods which one might get from a non-Jew which are aser because of the concern of non-kosher ingredients, like chalav and gavina, as well as several items which was not food items, which was not permitted to consume if it's manufactured by a non-Jew, not because of the contents, but because of the social context, as a concern of chasnus. One of those in particular is Bishul Akum. Rashi on the Mishnah Lamed Hei tells us the Bishul Akum is Aser Mishum Chasnas. It's meant the Eastern Bishul Akum is meant to serve as a speed bump to stop Jews from over socializing with non Jews. For the last time, I differentiated between being friendly and being friends. And that's the theme that Tosis picks up on Lamed Chesam and Aleph. Despite a difficult line in Rashi in Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, Tosfos points out that it's Gemara comes to the conclusion that Bishul Akum is Drabanan, and Tosfos says yes, and the issue is the issue of Chasnus. We had a chance last time to just begin to scratch the surface of the dinim of Bishul Akum. That's what we're going to dive into right now. We begin with the most basic question the Gemara discusses on top of Lamed Ches Amud Aleph is to which foods are susceptible to Bishul Akum. Bishul Akum means the non-Jew took the raw food and cooked it. So when he cooks it, even though he cooked it with kosher equipment, he cooked it with kosher ingredients. Everything is kosher, the materials are kosher, but if the non-Jew cooked it, so midrabanan, it's now treif midrabanan, it's also midrabanan to eat it, to be more precise, because it's bishul akum. But does that apply to all foods? Does that apply to coffee? Does that apply to water? Does that apply to pizza? Does that apply to tomato sauce? Does that apply to grilled fish? Which foods lend themselves to potato chips? Which foods lend themselves to Bishul Akum? The Nachri took the food and cooked it. Is it automatically Bishul Akum? The Gemara says not necessarily. Let's take a look at the Gemara inside. The very top of Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, Amar of Shmuel Bar of Yitzchak, Amar Rav. Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, the very top. Shmuel Bar Yitzchak quotes the name of Rav. This is version number one. Kol Hanech Al Kamos Shehu Chai Ein Bo B'Shem Mishulei Akum. A food which would have been edible raw, pre-cooked, so even if the non-Jew took it and cooked it, it remains mutter. It does not lend itself to Bishul Akum unless it's eino ne'achal chai. To have a piece of beef, not going to eat that raw, the Nachri cooked it, Nachri grilled it, that's a Bishul Akum problem. But to have an apple, and the Nachri baked it. So if I have a taste for baked apples, I may find that to be more of a delicacy. I may enjoy the baked apple more than the raw apple, but certainly raw apples are eminently edible. It's nechal, kamosha huchai. The apple could have been eaten uncooked, and therefore, even though the non-Jew went ahead and cooked it, that's not a problem of Bishul Akum. Besura, says the Gemara, masnoachi. That's the way in the yeshiva in Surah, during the latter period, the latter period of the Amoraim, going to the time of the Gaonim, there were two major yeshivas in Bavel, one in the town of Sura, one in the town of Pumpadisa. An earlier era of the Amoraim had been Sura and Nehardaah. Nehardaah seems to have fallen out of its prominence, and the yeshiva in Pumpadisa developed into a major, major Torah center. I believe, as an aside, the yeshiva in Pumpadisa was the longest running yeshiva in Jewish history. It's already a major Makom Torah in the middle of the period, in the middle of the Tekufas Amoraim, let's say 300, 350, 400, something like that. And it was vibrant. It was the leading Torah center, arguably, throughout much of the period of the Gaonim. And that takes you around the year 1000 or so. I believe that's where Rav Sadia Gaon and Rav Hai Gaon were Gaonim. And during much of the period of Gaonim, there were Shteha yeshivas, there were two yeshivas. Pumbedisa was very prominent.
and it loses its preeminence as we turn from the time of Gaonim to Rishonim. That's really what the period Rishonim means, is when the center of gravity was no longer sort of central. Torah was no longer centralized around Bavel. You already have major Torah centers along the Mediterranean coast, France, Germany, and Spain, and Italy, and North Africa, and Morocco, and so forth. That marks the shift of the period of Rishonim, and I think that's where the Rishonim lived. And the Rishonim we think about, they live in France, and in Germany, and some in Italy, and some in Spain, plenty of them in Spain, and some of them in Morocco. But there still was a operating yeshiva, at least until the period of the Rambam and beyond. At least until the 1100s. The Rambam has major machlokas with the Rosh Yeshiva from Bavel. So this is like a good 700-800 years at least. I think the longest running yeshiva in Jewish history. It was ironically not in Eretz Yisrael. It was in Bavel. It was actually in what we call nowadays in Arabic the city of Fallujah. Fallujah is assumed to be the same location that had been called Pumbedisa. So the Gemara says in Surah, they set this din over as being Nechal Kamoshu Chai. That the issue is it edible raw or not? That's what's going to determine whether a food lends itself to be shalakim. In Pumbedisa, Masnohachi, in the Shiva and Pumbedisa, they had the following version. It's a different version. Amar Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, Amar Rav, same set of names. Kol She'ino Nechal Shulchan Melachim, L'lapes Bo'os HaPas, Ein Bo Mishum Bishulei Hakim. If a food would not be served at the royal table as an accompaniment to bread, accompaniment to bread presumably means it's a significant part of the meal. It's a side, we would say. It's a main or a side, something you would eat with bread in their time. So it's the sort of thing that if it wouldn't have a significant place on the royal table, then there's no problem bishalachim. So you have two conditions the Gemara mentions. One is it edible raw or not? The other one is, would it be served at the royal table? And then the Gemara, now, as soon as you see that, you ask yourself right away, what would be the first question you ask yourself? See those two shittos? And you learn halacha, you ask yourself? Which one to be pasuk like? Machlok is Surah and Pumbedisa. So Tosus suggests that we should read carefully the next line of the Gemara. My Benai, the Gemara says, what's the difference between the whole shita number one and shita number two? Anything bother you about that? Yeah! What's the similarity? I mean, they're both rules to determine when there's bishlachim. They seem pretty different. I could think of 1,000 cases, no? Great. Arya says, oh, well. The Gemara says, my Benai, what's the difference? Sounds as though they're almost the same. Ike Benayu, dagim kitanim, ardi v'daisim. The difference is small fish. And ardi, which Rashi says are boule. If your French is not so strong, you could look in the Laze Rashi on the side, who tells you that means mushrooms. And daisa, hot cereal, oatmeal, farina, wheatina, that type of thing. So those three things are the nafkamina. Rashi says, what is it about these three things? The second Rashi. Ein nechal en chayim. You would not eat these things raw. No one's eating raw oats. No one's eating raw mushrooms. No one's eating, interesting. No one's eating raw fish, large or small. Hold your horses. I know. Hold your horses. But ain't all shulchan malachim. But they're not significant enough. A big fish, you could serve at the royal table. A little fish, not bakavadik. Ain't anis malachim ashir. You're not serving herring at the royal table. You could serve a whole tuna. You could serve, you know, so there you go. But yeah, a little fish, a little. That's not all al shulchan malachim. So Rashi says, look, if you hold like the first lashon, they're not edible raw, and therefore they're a problem. If you hold like the second lashon, well, they're not, wouldn't be served at the royal table, they're not royal fare, and therefore mutter. Now, Arya is still bothered by a very strong kasha. What do you need to ask the question, my benayu? There are 1,000 my ikabenayus. The Tosa says, take a look at Tosa. You see, ikabenayu? Ikabenayu, dagim katam, ardi vidaisa, pirish. Einam nechal machayim. On the one hand, they're not inedible raw, but they're small. They're not fancy. No one's serving oatmeal at the royal table. Om Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says. Rabbeinu Tam is bothered by Arya's kasha. Doesn't ask it as a kasha, but sets us up for the answer, which also will take us back to what Akiva asked, which is how do we pass them? Om Rabbeinu Tam. The fact that we chose those which are all inedible raw, but not significant at the royal table. V'lo nakat devash ugvina. How about we could have said the other way around? It goes to where we had honey and cheese, which are certainly can be significant foods that could find their place at the royal table, but are edible raw. So you might, you know, you might want to heat vegetables with cheese melted on top, but, or, you know, but you could melt cheese and pour it over your broccoli. You could also have the cheese raw, right? So that goes the other way, or honey. So Tosas says, notice that the point of the Ikebei Nahu, says Tosas, was to give a whole bunch of cases in one direction only. Why? Shema mina debay laminka devarim shenas behem lashon achron musaf a lashon rishon. The point of the Ikebei Nahu is to show that the second lashon adds to the first lashon. Ulahake alav. The point of the Ikebei Nahu is to show that the relationship between two lashonos is even if it would have been aser based on lashon number one alone, lashon number two can come be matir. In other words, we accept both of these lahakel. I feel chachai, but since it's not ola, less be shemishuli and akum. There were Rabbeinu Paskins hilchasa ketrei lishni. Rabbeinu Tam says the point of the Ikebei Nahu is to tell us that we paskin like both. It goes on to give more examples and more proofs. If you look throughout Shas, you'll see that sometimes we are makel based on rule number one, sometimes we're makel based on rule number two. And the Tam says that's because halacha, the point of the Gemara, the Ikebei Nahu, is to tell us that we are makel like both approaches, both the approach of Surah and the approach of Pumbedisna. If you turn to Shulchan Aruch, you will see exactly that. Se'if Aleph, turn the page. Se'if Aleph right over here. Davar she'eino nechal kamo shulchai. If you have something which is not edible raw, v'gam, and also, olah shulchan malachim, it will be served at the royal table. L'apes bo'os ha'pasol parperes. Either to put on bread, which in our terminology is the main, olah parperes, or as a side, and bishlo hanat nakum, if you have such a food, which is lahachmir on both conditions, it's inedible raw, and by the time your nakum is done with it, it's servable at the royal table, then even if it was bikli Yisrael, ubebeis Yisrael, asim yishum bishlo akum. Even though the non-Jew is cooking in your house, with your equipment, in other words, there's no concern of kashrus, for sure. And one could have imagined, Tosas points out, if it's in your house, maybe there's not such a problem of chasnas. Maybe it's more a problem of chasnas. He makes it in his house and gives you as a gift. Maybe if it's in your house, there were Rish Balia Tosas who thought that if it's in a Jewish home, it's mutter. Shulchan Aruch says, we clearly do not accept that. That's the top Tosas Lam Ches Tam Aleph. We pass like Rabbeinu Tam, that location doesn't matter. Your house, his house, it's all a problem. But clearly Shulchan Aruch says, we are makel at both of the conditions. It's only a bishul akum problem if it's both inedible raw, as before he cooked it, it was not edible at all. By the time it's done, not only is it edible, but it could be served at the royal table. So he really did like a full job. He took it from 0 to 100. He took it from inedible to servable at the royal table. Now, a couple of points. Number one, okay, we pass it like this. Right? Pass it all shalom chalachim. Yeah, so we're going to need to define both of these criteria, because either one is enough to get you off scot-free. I should have brought it in today. The OU has an internal manual for people who work for OU Kosher, Mashkichim, and so forth. They have an internal manual on a lot of topics, but I got my hands on an internal manual on Bishalakim. They have a whole host of tshuvas on specific issues, and then there's a chart of several hundred food items, whether they're bishul akum sensitive or not. There's one, and you have the whole list of foods, and they check off one of several boxes. One of them is, taka is a problem with bishul akum, better be careful. Or, it's not a problem with bishul akum for any one of a number of reasons. Most prominently, it's edible raw, and therefore not a problem. Or, it's the way it's prepared, it's not royal. It's not servable at the royal table, it's not ola shulchan lachem. So we're going to need to work on both. To understand what does it mean to be an edible raw, that could be alone. If it's edible raw, you're ready, good to go. Or I also have to say what it means to be ola al shulchan malachim. So let's begin. And that, that's something we're going to deal with now, and we're going to deal with later on also. Some of that discussion is right here in Sif Aleph, and some of that discussion comes as we come back to some of the details of this at the end of the Simmon. So we'll get back to it. Take a look for now at the Shach. Shach is in Tosa's position here on the outside of the page. The Sif Se Kohen, Shin Chaf the Shach. And this brings us, this is a whole new page. Right? We were learning, first semester we were learning Evan Ezer. We were learning Hilchas Yichud. So in Evan Ezer, the two main Mefarshim and Rashi Tosa position, with the Chalkas Mechalkin and Beis Shmuel. They are unique to Evan Ezer. Now we're meeting names that you find in Yoredeya and elsewhere. On the inside of the page is Ataz. He's both in Yoredeya and Arachayim, and sometimes appears on the bottom of the page in Evan Ezer as well. And then there's the Shach, the Sifsei Kohen, who appears on the outside of the page in Tosa position in both Yoredeya and Choshen Mishpat. And contemporary Svarim point out that the Shach will help us solve the problem that Avi Badzin wanted to ask before. Take a look at the Shach Sivkat and Beis. We'll pick up in the middle of the Shach. Here. The Chasav Od is going to Isser Vehetter. Isser Vehetter, a couple of Svarim called Isser Vehetter. This one is the Isser Vehetter of Rabbeinu Yonah, a very late Rishon, probably from the 1400s, in Ashkenazi. Again, here we are, the Shach is on the outside, Sivkat and Beis, halfway through Sivkat and Beis. See where my finger is, B'chas Avod. He quoted one thing from Isvetor, and now he says, Isvetor also writes as follows. The Kamehin Opitrios, what are Kamehin and Pitrios? Don't know. And mushrooms. The mushroom, Olin al Shulchan Melachim, they are servable at the royal table, Mishum Paparos, as a side. They might serve the royal table, might serve, let's say, chicken with garnished with mushrooms or something like that. And therefore, mushrooms are a bishul akum problem. The chaim pasak, that's what the chaf pei stands for, the chaim pasak, the tafches is Taras Chatas. Taras Chatas is a sefer of halacha written by the Ramah. Ramah paskins like this psak of the Isser Vehetter. Anything bother, anything surprise you about that? It's against the Gemara. Well, what do you mean? You have a Rishon has a temerity to argue in the Gemara and lo die, but the Ramah passes like him and the Shach passes him. Well, no one says boo. What do you mean? We said before. And one of the examples was Ardi, right, which was the mushrooms. The mushrooms are a problem. Mushrooms are not a problem. Bishlachim, why? Rashi and Tosas both said because there ain't no Ola Shalchalachim. Well, so perhaps a different kind of mushrooms. Or perhaps, Kamehin Pitcher sounds like all mushrooms. So perhaps, but it's hard to make the argument that if Kamehin Pitcher is general, but keep thinking. What do you see? The contemporary post Sauron point out, what you see from the Shach is that he's not really arguing Shulchan Aruch because right, because these categories are not frozen in time. The principles are forever. The principle is Nechachai Ol Shulchan Lachem. But to determine the categories last, but how any individual, but the facts change. Is this particular food going to be considered Nechachai, not Nechachai? Is this particular food going to be considered Ol Shulchan Lachem or not? That could change. So, and here's the irony, by the way. Halacha L'maisa, we're back to following the Gemara. Halacha L'maisa, nowadays, not 500 years ago, 600 years ago, when the Isser Vehetter and Rabban the Shach, now, in the 21st century, and even the 20th century, mushrooms were and are no longer Bishul Akum. We're back to them being mutter, like in the days of the Gemara, ironically for the opposite reason. The days of the Gemara, mushrooms were not servable at the royal table. Nowadays, mushrooms is. Sometimes mushrooms, especially shiitake and portobello, definitely have a tremendous amount of social value. Even, you know, plain mushrooms definitely could be served in a significant way. But nowadays, mushrooms are mutter because, right, because you eat them raw. You eat them raw all the time in salad. So even though you might enjoy them more when they're grilled, okay, but l'maisa nechachai. So that's the irony. We've gone through all three stages. In the days of the Gemara, mushrooms are mutter because ain't all shulchan lachem. In the Middle Ages, rather, the end of the Middle Ages, the Isser Vehetter, Ramah the Shach, the taka was aser because it was all al shulchan lachem, and now it's mutter because, but for the other reason, because it's inedible raw carrots. Your great grandparents, I imagine, at least most of your great grandparents, would not have been caught dead eating raw carrots. Raw carrots for Jews, certainly for Jews who lived in Eastern Europe, raw carrots were for rabbits.
human beings don't eat raw carrots. They eat cooked carrots. Tzimis. That's the way a person eats carrots. Well, what type of self-respecting person? We eat raw carrots like a rabbit. Right? So, but 150 years ago, if a non-Jew made the tzimis, that was a real Bishul Akum problem, potentially. That was because the carrots were not nechal chai. Nowadays, I think you have a hard time finding people who will eat the cooked carrots. We all assume raw carrots are entirely, and some people don't like vegetables, unfortunately. But people who are open to eating vegetables, right, raw carrots are certainly a standard item. So nowadays, if the non-Jew did grill the carrots, let's say, it's no longer Bishul Akum problem because, again, the categories are the same. The facts have changed. One or two guys waiting for a question, and then I want to take a look with you at a Taz that's going to speak to another important issue before we wrap up. Yeah. The rules are frozen. The categories are frozen, but how you apply the category, the facts change.
Right. Does that also apply by place?
Place.
Yeah. Some places maybe don't eat raw mushrooms or eat raw.
Yes. Right. So if you right, it's totally ba'osa makom ba'osa zman. Right. So if I'm in a country, let's say, where everyone eats steak tartare, I find this European country where most people eat raw meat, raw beef. Okay, so in that country, if you have kosher beef and a non-Jew grilled it, it's not a Bishul Akum. Again, assuming everything was kosher ingredients, kosher game, not a Bishul Akum problem because nechal chai. In America, you can find high-end restaurants that will serve this to, you have a very tiny sliver of the population that eats raw meat. Even sushi, we'll get to sushi. We'll talk about later on. When the topic comes in the end of the simon, is where you draw the law. How many, what percentage? No, that sushi is raw. The question is, the fact that people eat sushi, does that mean that it's fish is nechal chai? So that's an interesting question to think about. But it could be that in America it's not common enough, but it could be perhaps in Japan it is common. So yeah, it's totally ba'osa makom, absolutely. Totally ba'osa makom, uba'osa zman. I want to take a look together, and then we'll take more questions, at a very, very brief Taz. It sounds you could make the mistake of reading this Taz and thinking he didn't say much. That would be a mistake. It would be understandable, it would be a mistake. The top task, top right corner, Sipkan Av. Dover Sheino Necha Chai, right? And it's all Shochem Lachem. So the task says, Wahatam, what's the reason for this? He means specifically for the din of the criterion of Olal Shochem Lachem. What's it all about? The Iker Akzeir Mishum Chasnus. Because the primary driver, the motivation for the whole Gzir Jabban of Bishul Akum was chasnus. So you want to impede free and easy socializing. If it's not so significant, then I wouldn't invite my friend over for this. Now, okay, that sounds reasonable. The truth is, no one's quoting a Rambam. Not absolutely verbatim, but pretty close. When the Rambam quotes these dinim of it talks about Bishul Akum, he quotes this din of Ola Shulchan Lachem, he said the sort of thing that you would be mechabed a guest with. Because after all, that's what's driving it. So number one, you understand the Svara. And number two, the Taz allows us, and the Rambam, really, whom the Taz is quoting, allows us to respond to the following question. Practically speaking, how do you determine Ola Al Shulchan Lachem? I'm running a kosher organization. So I'm trying to compose my list of which foods are Bishul Akum sensitive and which are not. And by the way, just to explain for a moment, for 10-20 seconds, recognize that if something is Bishul Akum sensitive, it's going to make a very significant impact on how you run your hashgacha and how expensive the hashgacha is. Because if I have canned carrots are not, canned foods are always cooked, they're cooked in the can, in the liquid. In the can. That's why there's a little bit of head space, empty space on top, because they cook it they seal it, and then they cook it in the can. They run it through steam jackets. They superheat inside, and it cooks in liquid. There's room for it to expand. So if we're doing a run of cooked carrots, let's say we're doing a run of tomato sauce. The tomato sauce is not a Bishul Akum problem, because tomatoes are edible raw. So if I'm giving hashgacha on tomato sauce, I just have to make sure that the ingredients are kosher and the equipment is kosher, but I do not have to worry about Bishul Akum. Which means that I could set up enough protocols and systems and then
do spot checks. I don't have to be there for every single run of the tomato sauce. I have to do a lot of work ahead of time to set up systems for which ingredients and how we're going to check on things, and I have to do random checks, yotze v'nichnas, but I don't have to be there at the beginning of every single run of tomato sauce. Canned potatoes might be a different story. If canned potatoes, nobody's raw potatoes, so if canned potatoes are our bishul akum problem, that means you need a mashgiach there at the beginning of every single run to turn on the furnace, otherwise the bishul akum problem. That's very expensive. It's just a lot more manpower. Right? So this is a significant question. So I'm trying to draw up my list of what's bishul akum sensitive and what is not. So what do you mean? Oh, nechol chai we can figure out. Ol shav v'lachem, ask your local king. They do that. There is no king. So there are rabbanim who have reached out to the one major hashgacha organization in the United States that actually reached out to, supposedly, the Rav HaMachshir reached out to the presidential chef and reached out to the royal chef of Denmark, supposedly. And truth is, the Chazon Ish, in the mid-20th century, he had a line, they quote from the Chazon Ish, that the Queen of England eats sardines for breakfast. Steak dinner, you're not going to have sardines, pasta, but you have it for breakfast, so she's a queen, Ola al Shulchan Malach. There was this idea out there, and Mama has to do like the Melech, that's usually built around that idea of the Chazon Ish. That is, however, not widely accepted, based on the Rambam, the Taos quotes. It's not about the king, the dinner of the king, Chavod Malchus, no. It's just a way of saying a formal dinner. It's a socially significant food. You're not gonna invite a friend over and give him garbage. I mean, they have, you know, a good friend over here is giving a couple of jelly beans, but open up a bag of chips. But if you're having a person who comes to visit you, you're not just gonna pop open chips and salsa. And you're gonna have something more socially significant, which is why in the OU Tshuvas, the way they assess. There's a Darkei Tshuva already has a line about Shulchan Sarim, doesn't have to be the king, nobleman. I mean, it's really just a question of socially significant food, which by halacha l'maisa, the way the OU determines it is to look at what's served at weddings. What would be served at a formal function? So let's say taro chips. So potatoes, no one serves potato chips at a wedding, but they do serve taro chips. I mean, absolutely. Taro chips? Sure.
Maybe they use
it differently. I don't think so.
Don't.
So that's again, we discussed, we developed thoroughly that we possibly like both opinions. And two key issues in terms of how we actually apply this. Number one, as we see from the Shach, that we can reopen the question of the factual question, but also Malkum Ba'osaz Ma'am, and what flows from that Taz, that the definition of Ol Shulchan Aruch is not about the king, it's about a socially significant meal. Speaking of which, enjoy your lunch.